if gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. They brought death to hometown, boys. Death to hometown, boys. Death to hometown, boys. Death to hometown. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. And guess what we're going to talk about today? What's the most important economic political issue on the agenda? Well, of course, it's the debt ceiling negotiations going on in Washington, D.C. Not just debt ceiling. Let's not forget the government shutdown. And let's also not forget the sequestered cuts that are now beginning to take effect with a vengeance as well. So we really have three problems here. On top of an economy in the U.S. that had already begun to slow over this late summer, the Federal Reserve downgraded its forecast again for the fourth time in as many years for the U.S. economic growth. As well, the IMF and the World Bank also downgraded global economic growth estimates. So the U.S. and the global economy were already slowing going into this crisis. And what do we get in the crisis? Well, we got an impact on the economy already beginning, and I'll talk about that. And I want you all to know that I've made predictions about this and the impact of this and even how it relates to the possibility of the U.S. slipping into a second double-dip recession. Months ago, in January this year, I made my annual predictions in Z Magazine, and I said the U.S. will fall into a double-dip recession if one or more of the following three things happen. First, a banking crisis in the Eurozone, in Europe. Second, more intense return to intensive deficit cutting in the U.S. later in the second half, i.e., that's what we're seeing right now, of course, behind all this. Okay. Or, third, interest rates in the U.S. began to rise more rapidly. And that began this past summer as a result of Federal Reserve policies associated with QE and tapering and so forth. Well, we talked about that in previous shows, if you remember. Well, we got three causes here, two of which are emerging. One, the interest rates on the monetary front. We'll talk today how not just long-term interest rates, but now short-term interest rates are rising as a result of this debt ceiling fiasco. So that's beginning to occur. Secondly, deficit cutting with a vengeance is back. And that's what this is all about. The debt ceiling is just a hammer that's being used by Republicans and their faction called the T-Publicans, the Tea Party faction in the Republican Party. And the Republicans themselves are attempting to use the debt ceiling as a hammer to extract significant additional deficit cuts in social spending programs, especially Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, from the current budget and the proposed budget in 2014, Obama's budget. That's what this is all about. More deficit cutting. They're always intended to reach a deal on the debt ceiling. It's just, what are they going to get for it? And how much are the Democrats going to give up for it? In other words, a repeat of what happened in 2011 and 2012, which was extended, bargaining of the negotiations extended over a two-year period. Now you see the same events, using the debt ceiling to extract deficits and cuts in social spending. You see this happening again, but in a telescoped time frame. In other words, in 2 months instead of 2 years. What occurred in the first debt ceiling deal of August 2011, we'll talk about that once more, and the conclusion of that two-year deal, which was the fiscal cliff solution of last January 1st, that's repeating here again, but this time in a matter of just a couple months. In other words, let's get some cuts, some more cuts, the differences in the Republican Party is whether you're going to have Obamacare as part of the cuts or not. The smarter Republicans, the Boehners, the leadership, and so forth, they know that that's a dead cat. What they really wanted, starting in August, he said so publicly, was we're going to use the debt ceiling. This is Boehner, almost verbatim. We're going to use the debt ceiling to extract more spending cuts out of these Democrats. Well, what it really means is Social Security, Medicare. It's not Democrats. It's Grandma and Grandpa. That's who they're going to bleed this time around. Last time, it was general spending cuts, $1 trillion. No, $2.2 trillion, excuse me, if you count the sequester. That was out of students and out of everybody else across the board. They didn't attack Social Security, Medicare at that time, leaving that for the next round. Well, the next round's here. And that's what this is really all about. And we're going to see that emerge more clearly as the days and weeks go on. Okay. The topic today is the coming debt ceiling shutdown deal. Yes, a deal is coming. I've been predicting it for weeks, in fact, for months. And it's going to be a repeat, pretty much in terms of content and solution of compared to the first deal of 2011 plus 12. So, the coming debt ceiling deal is the topic today. Or maybe we should say behind the Washington debt ceiling negotiations. Now, if you want to read what I've been saying about this, go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, where last December I wrote a series of blog articles as the negotiations were going on with regard to the fiscal cliff. And read the article, Fiscal Cliff, the Well-Orchestrated Dance, and what was behind that and how that was crafted. For a longer version of that, you might read my January 2013 Z Magazine article, The Three Faces of the Fiscal Cliff. I also wrote a bunch of articles right before the August 2011 debt ceiling deal. That's all on my blog, jackrasmus.com. You can also get that and my radio interviews and public presentations on my website, same stuff, which is kyklosproductions.com, kyklosproductions.com. So if you want deeper background material on all this, then just go to those two sites and pick it up. Now, I believe on the Progressive Radio Network site, two of my most recent blogs in the recent days have been posted, and one is the coming debt ceiling deal, 2.0, and the other is the economic consequences of a U.S. debt default. So just check it out on the Progressive Radio Network here as well. And read the most recent. We're going to talk about the content of those two. And you might check out last week's Alternative Vision show where I interviewed Margaret Flowers and we talked about Obamacare and its relationship to these negotiations and the crisis, the shutdown, and the debt ceiling. Okay. Once again, what's going on now, keep in mind, is a telescoping of deficit cutting via shutdown and sequestered cuts combined with the debt ceiling, which is the tactic to extract these cuts. It happened before over an extended two-year period in different parts, and it's happening now all concentrated. Okay. Let's look at some of the details here. Let's start with what's going on today. What's actually happening today? You know, one day you hear, oh, they got a settlement. Next day you hear, oh, they don't have a settlement, and so forth. They're going to get a settlement. They got a deal working. And they've been working it out since last week. Not this past weekend, but the weekend before, House Speaker John Boehner got on the TV shows, you know, the talk shows, press shows over the weekend. And if you listen closely, it's kind of a government speak. Politicians speak you know, politicians. What's the definition of a politician? Someone who has to lie 95% of the time. So you can hardly tell what they really mean. They're kind of saying what, especially during elections, what they want, what they think you want them to say. But sometimes they, you know, they give signals. You got to read between the lines. And what did Boehner say when he got up on these shows? Well, two things. One, on one hand, he said, "Oh, you know, we got to do Obamacare. We got to cut it back, defund it, and so on and so forth." But he also made it clear that, "Oh, the real issue is general deficit cutting and spending." Well, saying the latter, and not just the former, which he had been saying, just cut Obamacare, you know, echoing the Tea Party faction line. For him to start saying two of these is a signal. Okay, you know we got to start talking about the bigger issues. And then what happened? Well, then a day later, Paul Ryan, the Tea Publican dandy in the House, he came out and wrote an extended editorial article in the Wall Street Journal where he kind of said the same thing. Well, the real issue is deficit spending in general. You know, which is the code word for let's cut Social Security and Medicare, because they had already cut $1 trillion out of other forms of spending. Now the topic and the target this year has been Social Security and Medicare. Here's a Tea Publican dandy here, Paul Ryan, and he's saying, Obamacare is not the real target. The real target is deficit cutting. And that's significant. That was the second significant development last week, signaling the Tea Party beginning to move off of its position of defund Obamacare or else. And then you read the real strange things happening last week, like the billionaire Koch brothers. And what did they say? Well, they actually came out in a widely distributed piece among the right saying, deficit cutting is more important than Obamacare. After all, you know, it's the Koch brothers and others that fund the Tea Party. They're the power, the gray blur behind the scene of the Tea Party. Most of the Tea Partiers don't even know that themselves. So you have a shift that was going on last week within the Tea Party faction itself, and in fact, many of the Tea Partiers conveniently moved away. There, you know, there's about 80 of them in the House, and about half of them sort of started backing off of this. Obamacare is the only issue, although there's about 40 real, real hardliners there who are holding things up. But they're not going to last very long. They're already showing indications that they're willing to back off of the Obamacare issue. It's no longer, we got to defund Obamacare. You know, then it became, we got to delay Obamacare. And then it became, in recent weeks, most recently, let's just delay the individual mandate to Obamacare. And now it's even a further retreat, and what they're talking about is, we need some sort of face-saving concession on Obamacare to show that we did something. See, the Republican leadership in August, as I said, announced their strategy of debt ceiling for deficit cuts, spending cuts, Social Security, Medicare cuts. They announced that, pretty much saying, well, we're going to do what proved very successful in the past, first time around. It was successful for them. No wonder John Boehner said, we're going to do it again. But the Tea Publicans jumped into the mix in September of this year and injected the Obamacare issue as the key issue. And they all grandstanding. You know, Ted Cruz, really grandstanding. He knows. He knew, and he knows he could never get anything through the Senate on that. So why did he do it? Yeah, you're filibustering. Why did he do it? He did it for opportunist reasons. He did it to become, one of the new favored among the Tea Party faction, so that he will be a candidate running for the Republican nomination next time around. Bunch of Tea Partiers, he's going to try to get to the head of that pack. And that's why Cruz did all that, knowing full well he couldn't achieve anything. Look, the Tea Party has factions within it. Faction. And who are these? Well, the dyed-in-the-wool ideologues, Rand Pauls and folks like that, who really believe that the solution is to get rid of central banking and the Federal Reserve and go back to a gold standard. Ha, 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 go back to a gold standard. Guaranteed 20% global GDP crash if you did. Guaranteed long-term depression if you do. You can't go back to the gold standard, just as you can't get rid of central banks. The question is, who are the central banks going to serve? Are they going to serve private banks, which they do now, or are they going to serve the rest of the country? Well, you're going to have to get into some form of public banking to do that and to reform the Federal Reserve. But that's another topic, another time. So within the Tea Party faction, there is a ideological faction. There is also an opportunist faction. People like Ted Cruz and Paul Ryan in the House, they're just riding that wave because they see it as a way of promoting their own personal interests. And then there's another group that's just dumbass ignorance in the Tea Party. Don't really understand anything about economics and don't understand that democracy means compromise. They say, oh, principles. We've got to stand by our principles. Okay. So that's the Tea Party faction. It's a faction within the Republican Party. And the Tea Party has terrorized the Republicans. They're running scared. The old guard's running scared because every time the old guard does not toe the Tea Party line on certain issues, the Tea Party runs candidates against them in the primaries and whips their butt. That's happened a couple times, more than a couple times in the Senate and elsewhere in the House. So they're terrified. The old guard Republicans are terrified. The Tea Republicans are running amok. And they haven't figured out how to stop them. There's really 2.5 parties in the U.S. now. And one of them, a half party, is the Tea Publicans, entrenched within the Republican Party. Okay. So that's the politics of what's going on. See, this is really all about midterm elections next year, 2014. You can see repeated this all over again in 2014, right before the midterm elections. This is a dress rehearsal for what's going to happen again, regardless of the terms of the settlement, which is coming. It'll be repeated again. And then again, before the 2016 national elections. You see, they really don't want to get rid of Obamacare. It's just such a convenient whipping post because there are problems with the act. We've talked about this last week, and we'll continue to talk about it. There's some real big problems with it. The Democrats say, well, let's go back and fix it. Well, they can barely hold on to the version they've got. How are they going to go back and fix it? We should have had Medicare for all from the very beginning. That's the only solution to the insurance companies ripping us off. The Obamacare Act is not a health care act. It's a health insurance bribery reform act. Yes, we're going to take money from here and there, from union workers and from middle class folks, and even some from the rich, and we're going to provide subsidies for some, about half of those working poor who have no coverage. Anyway, I don't want to get into Obamacare, although we talked about that last week. We'll watch that very closely as it continues. Okay. I'm not arguing, of course, that Obamacare is bad in every dimension. No, there's some good things in it, but it's fundamentally, a few crumbs good things for the folks to buy into it, and it's really a subsidized health insurance companies act. And the only solution to the health care crisis in this country, which is not abating, is Medicare for All. Or maybe some sort of public option in Medicare for All. Now, if the rich don't want to go into Medicare, well, you know, let them go into some public option health insurance. There's no reason why the two can't coexist. Okay. Again, let me move on to what's going on now. Latest version here. We got about 30, 40 hardliners in the House who are still holding up the deal. Yesterday, Tuesday, it appeared as if there was a deal. Oh, and then it collapsed last night. Well, now it looks like there may be one on again. Right? That means they're getting very, very close. And you're hearing the last gasps of the 30, 40 Republicans in the House desperately blocking something and hoping they'll get something else extracted out of it. What's their latest position? Their latest public position. They may have another position today. But as of yesterday, they came back and replied to the Senate, the House, to only reopen the government, fund the government, until December 15th. And that was a two-month reopener to end the government shutdown. And to provide authority to raise the debt ceiling until February 7th of next year. And in the meantime, begin negotiations on what they call long-term budget issues. Code word, Social Security, Medicare. Right? That's their position. Now, they removed their demands from Obamacare changes. Remember, initially it was defund the whole thing, get rid of it. Then it was a weaker position. Now, their latest position is they agree, the House agrees, has agreed to delay the Medicare device tax for 2 years. And then they said yesterday, well, we'll pull that off the table. So they're not even asking for Medicare device tax recall. They were previously also saying they wanted tougher income verification for those who would get the subsidies at the low end. Okay, well, they dropped that too. And they also dropped the delay on the tax on insurance companies. So, you know, three provisions, major provisions, were dropped from their proposal, which is essentially fund the government, short term, 2 months, extend debt ceiling until February 7th. In other words, we'll get another bite at this apple in 2-3 months. Oh, one thing they did add as a face saver, end the subsidy for Congress people and their staffers, the ACA, in other words, Obamacare subsidy. They won't be able to get subsidies. I don't understand that because I thought you had to have a low income, less than $45,000 a year, in order to get a subsidy. Now, I know these Congress people are making a heck of a lot more even in their direct salary than $45,000 a year. Who knows what else they're making in terms of their speaking engagements and so forth and other ways they make money. You know, 98 or 99 out of the senators are millionaires. I don't know. It's probably not as bad in the House. But why would they even be eligible for a subsidy under the ACA? Well, okay, they're staffers. I can't see how staffers may be making less than $30,000 in Washington, D.C. If they are, they ought to give them a raise. Okay. So the Tea Party faction wants something, some kind of face saver. Say that, see, what we did was we broke precedent here. There was a law that was established, and because we fought it, they had to give up something. Oh, a precedent's been set. Next time, we'll come back in 2014, and we'll get an even bigger precedent-setting reduction in something. See how good we are? All you Tea Party supporters, we're taking apart Obamacare brick by brick. Now, keep in mind, there are certain groups behind the Tea Party here, like Heritage Action. Now, this is a billionaire-funded front group, Heritage Action. And what it does is threaten any Republican, if you don't vote Tea Party, we're going to publicize your vote, and we're going to promote and do whatever we can to run Tea Publicans against you in your primary. See, this is where the only place where the action is in primaries anymore, because both Democrats and Republicans have agreed to gerrymander safe seats for each other over the last decade or two. Yeah, something like, 380 of the seats are, quote, safe. So any one time you have an election, you get maybe 20 or 30 House seats that are actually open for competition. Yeah, they've scratched each other's back and made sure that they both got safe seats. Well, the problem is for the Democrats that the Republicans have more safe seats than they do, so they always have an advantage in controlling the House. They got to really screw up, like under George W. Bush, to temporarily lose control of the House. They got an advantage there. Okay, so Boehner. Let's talk about John Boehner. Where does he come in this picture? Boehner wants to keep his job as House Speaker. And the Republicans are pretty much telling him, you know, with a loaded gun, if you don't, we will shoot you down. If you don't do what we do, you know, Cantor, our boy here, our Tea Republican boy, is right behind you, breathing down. And we'll put him in if you don't do what we do. So John Boehner wants to stay there. So he caters to the Tea Republicans and the faction. And they control them. So they see the Tea Republicans have a pretty good strategy of controlling the House and getting elected to the House. And that's what they really see, a long-term strategy where they'll deepen their penetration of the House and then try the Senate. Right? And then take on the presidency. And then, if they get all levers of government, bar the door. You ain't seen nothing yet. Look, some people say there's fascism growing in America. There's no fascism in America. What's fascism about? Yeah, that's when corporations create these groups to beat up on liberals and progressives and union folks and workers to physically prevent them, drive them out of power and out of politics. Well, they don't have to do that in the U.S. They're winning legally. You know, Supreme Court's totally on their side, giving them all the decisions they want when it comes to money and corporate power and candidates. Don't forget Bush versus Gore. Don't forget Citizens United and the extension of Citizens United that's going to be considered by the U.S. Supreme Court again. That gives billionaires like the Koch brothers pretty much spend whatever you want for whoever you want. That's the strategy. It's a long-term strategy. They got a deep foothold in the House, and they want to deepen it and expand it, totally transform the Republican Party into a radical right-wing party, well on its way, and drive the Democratic Party further to the right in the process, which is happening as well. Okay. So that's where we are in terms of the current negotiations. The Tea Republicans are already withdrawn, or almost totally withdrawn, from their issue of Obamacare as the key issue. It's almost off the table. They're just looking for a face saver, token face saver. And all the signals are from the leaders in the Republican Party and outside the Republican Party, that now we're going to get down to the real business at hand, and that is negotiating real deficit cuts by attacking Social Security and Medicare. And, oh, by the way, coming up quietly right behind all this is another massive tax cut for corporations. You see, the fiscal cliff was about $4.6 trillion over the decade of tax cuts, most of which, 80% of which, went to wealthy households and investors. That was individual income tax. They got that big bite of the apple. $4 trillion of it in the fiscal cliff, passed, permanent now, even better, sweeter positions on the inheritance tax under Obama than there were under George W. Bush, even a better deal on alternative minimum tax under Obama than there was under George W. Bush, and now the $4 trillion is permanent, does not expire. What a deal. That was the fiscal cliff, folks. They got just about everything they wanted, and just a little token stuff for the Democrats to say, oh, we raised taxes on the rich. Well, they took with the right hand and gave back with the left. It wasn't $60 billion a year. It's less, maybe half of that. And they get to keep $4 trillion in exchange for that, and it's permanent. No wonder even the Republicans went for it last December. So that's in the background, taking the form of the major tax code overhaul moving through the House very fast, House of Representatives, and going to be concluded just about the time we are really getting down to this whole thing about deficit cutting, Social Security, and Medicare. It's the same thing that's beginning to emerge, that emerged back in 2011 and 2012. Now that the Republicans and Obamacare issue is fading into the background once again, and the real issues that were always the real issues are coming back to the fore. Okay, we're going to take a little break here, and then I'm going to come back and talk about this same topic. This is Alternative Visions, Jack Rasmus. We're talking about the deficit cutting behind the debt ceiling deal. This is your host, Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. We're talking about the current debt ceiling negotiations going on in D.C. and the historical background and origins to that, and why there is going to be a settlement, as I've predicted, and what that settlement will look like. Okay. Once again, while we were during the break here, I took a look on the PRN website, and apparently my last two blog pieces published in Counterpunch and elsewhere are not yet up there. So if people are really interested in seeing what I've written in the last few days on all this in more detail, just go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, and read the last two entries. The coming debt ceiling deal 2.0, written yesterday, a couple days before that, the economic consequences of U.S. debt default. And you can also find there my prior writings on the fiscal cliff last December 2012 and on the first debt ceiling deal in July 2011. Just scroll down based on the dates. Okay. So let's continue here. Again, the point to keep in mind is John Boehner, House Speaker, has to, if he wants to keep his job, fight down to the last minute. He's got to resist all the way to the end and then cave in. That's going to happen here in the next day or two, maybe over the weekend at the most. That's because the debt ceiling issue is having an accelerating negative effect on the U.S. and soon the global economy. And they're not going to let it get out of control in that regard. The leadership in both parties are ready to do the dance. The dance is, okay, let's cut spending and some taxes in exchange for a debt ceiling deal. Let's go back to August 2011. What happened? Well, that's when we had the first debt ceiling deal. Debt ceiling .1, 1.0, we can call that, okay? And what was that deal? That deal was essentially $1 trillion in discretionary spending cuts, absolutely no tax hikes of any kind, in exchange for Obama and the Democrats getting peace on the debt ceiling issue until after the 2012 national elections. In other words, they traded $1 trillion. Democrats, Obama traded $1 trillion in spending cuts just for political peace for themselves. All along they were saying, oh, we got to have some tax hikes. They didn't get any tax hikes. Also now part of that August 2011 deal, called the Budget Control Act, was another $1.2 trillion in spending-only cuts as well that were backloaded, delayed, until January of this year, January 1st of this year. That was called the sequestered cuts, $1.2 trillion more. So, in other words, $2.2 trillion of spending-only cuts. Now, compare that to Obama's initial stimulus bill when he first comes into office to get the economy going from the depths of the deep recession of only $787 billion. That was less than $1 trillion. So for 1 year, $1 trillion, let's say, in spending stimulus, 40% of which, by the way, were tax cuts, again, mostly for the rich, so you can almost disregard that. We're talking about $600 billion in Obama's original stimulus bill 2009, $500 billion on an economy that was almost $15 trillion. You know, it was about a 4% GDP stimulus. Well, no wonder it didn't work. And after a year, it dissipated, had virtually no effects, and we've been bouncing along the bottom ever since. Well, on top of that, in 2011 and 12, what do we get? We get $2.2 trillion, or $1 trillion in 2011-12, and now another $2.2 trillion. In other words, more than 2.5 times the stimulus has been austerity, the opposite of the stimulus, taking the money out of the economy. And actually, it's more than $2.2 billion when you count multipliers. You know, we've really taken over $3 trillion out of the economy, you might say. Although the sequester is going to happen over a sequence of years to come. We've been on austerity program here since 2011. It starts in with the debt ceiling deal of $1 trillion, followed by $1.2 trillion, which was delayed. Now, the Democrats never thought the $1.2 trillion sequester would be agreed to because there's $500 billion or so of defense cuts. They thought that would be enough to get the Republicans to agree not to allow the sequester cuts to go into effect on January 1st. Well, they did. Actually, it started going into effect on March. They gave it a two-month delay. But now we're only really beginning to feel the full impact of those sequestered cuts now in the October 1st beginning of the current budget. Now it's beginning to bite, the sequestered cuts. Remember, they're coming on top of the $1 trillion already cut. And remember, on top of that, we got the government shutdown and the problem that that's causing in terms of economic recovery. Economists estimate that if this shutdown goes on for several more weeks, it could take a half of 1% off of fourth quarter GDP. Okay. And also, if the short-term interest rates rise, which they are as a result of the debt ceiling negotiations, that could take another one half of 1% off fourth quarter GDP. Well, we're only growing at 1.5%, according to the latest indications. So in other words, they would just about, if this thing continues, it would just about wipe out fourth quarter GDP growth, which means we will be at best no growth, stagnant, zippo. And not only zippo, but if we correctly estimated the inflation adjustment using the CPI, Consumer Price Index, we would be negative. We will have entered a recession here in the fourth quarter. That's guaranteed. Okay. What are the impacts of this that are already beginning to be felt? Well, again, read my article, Economic Consequences of U.S. Debt Default, but they're real. They're not fake, they're real. We already have a stalling out in the housing recovery this past summer because interest rates, long-term interest rates, rose about a full percentage point over the summer because of the Federal Reserve bungling its signaling an attempt to withdraw the $85 billion a month free money it's been injecting into the banks and wealthy investors under what's called QE, Quantitative Easing 3, third version. You know, one, two, three versions over the last 4 years, almost $4 trillion of free money virtually given to investors and bankers. And, of course, it hasn't had much effect on the real economy, but it's sure done a lot for the stock and bond markets and derivatives markets and global foreign exchange speculators and property speculators, what I call the global money parade. That's where most of that money is gone. But the point is, over the summer, the Federal Reserve signaled, oh, it's going to, you know, start cutting back on that $85 billion free money, maybe $5 or $10 billion. Well, what happened was the bondholders and speculators went crazy, and they raised rates, and the rates have stayed up there pretty much. Long-term rates, 10 to 30-year rates, mortgage rates, brought the mortgage recovery, the housing recovery, to a virtual stop over the summer, which was mostly refis anyway, which had nothing to real economic growth. But that's mostly come to a halt already before all this debt ceiling stuff. The housing recovery is dead in the water. It wasn't much in the first place, but it was something. Because of rising interest rates already. Look, when banks like Wells Fargo and Chase and so forth all announced they're laying off thousands in their mortgage processing and serving departments, that means it's over, folks. That means mortgages aren't going to be rewritten. And the housing recovery is over, as tepid as it has been. Also, the states are going to feel more of a crunch as interest rates rise. You know, there's a thing called the municipal bond market, and rates are rising there, too. Make it harder for states to borrow money, which means they're going to stop spending elsewhere. So the states stop spending, housing stops growing. The federal government now cuts its spending even more with the sequester and with the shutdown. Come on, you don't think all this is going to have an impact on fourth quarter and beyond the U.S. economy? Of course it is. Now, I've been talking about long-term rates. What about short-term rates? Treasury bills, not treasury bonds. Those are going up as well, over 0.5% in just a few weeks. Hey, look, when the big banks say they've dumped all their treasury bills, which they've just admitted, because they think the rates are going to go up, you got a problem here. Because if short-term treasury bill rates go up, a bunch of other short-term rates go up, including what's called the repo market rates, which I won't get into, it's a little arcane. But then, if you got a problem in the repo market, the repo market is the analog to the subprime mortgage market crash. That's a big problem. At the same time, we see consumer confidence plummeting. You know, back in August 2011, in the third quarter of 2011, we got zero growth almost. GDP, because of all the debt ceiling stuff, the economy almost came to a stop because consumers stopped spending. Well, we got the same thing beginning to happen now. Consumer confidence plummeted the index to a minus 35 from a minus 15 over the summer, fell to minus 35 in the latest indicator. Now, keep in mind, in 2011, when we had the other debt ceiling thing, it fell to a minus 56. And in 2008, during the banking crash, it was a minus 65. So we've gone from minus 15 to minus 35 just a matter of a couple of weeks. If this continues, it will be very much like August 2011 and maybe even potentially like 2008. Big problem. Already beginning to hit the consumer who's pulling in his spending horns. Following a September back-to-school sales cycle, which was the worst in several years. Hiring will come to a halt. The problem with jobs in the U.S. is not that we're losing jobs. It's just that we can't create jobs. And the jobs that we do create are part-time, temp, low-paid jobs. Well, that doesn't do much for income growth and consumer spending. Yes, and of course, income growth for median households is dropping and has dropped every year during the so-called recovery. What a recovery for middle America. Income is dropping 1 to 1.5% per year. Latest studies show, from the University of California, Berkeley, that the wealthy 1% in the last 4 years got 95% of all the income gains during the recovery. 95%, folks, that's based on IRS data. They recovered everything, and no one else recovered anything. So we're going to have a hiring stall coming. Watch, you know, watch the next employment data reports, see what happens. Now, globally, this causes problems as well, additional problems. The debt ceiling crisis. What are some of the additional problems? Well, when you have a debt ceiling crisis and the U.S. doesn't pay its debts, by the way, there's several weeks to go. Tomorrow's not the deadline. Sometime in middle or early November is when the real default will come. Okay, so what happens globally, though? Well, the dollar falls in value. If the dollar falls in value, that means other currencies rise in value. All right, so the euro rises in value. What does that do? Well, Europe depends, especially Germany, on exports. And if the price of their currency rises, they sell fewer exports. And their ridiculous recovery of 0.3% in GDP after 2 years of recession in Europe comes to a halt as well. At the same time, you know, if the dollar falls, then the value of countries holding U.S. treasuries that they've bought, let's say China, $3 trillion of foreign currencies, most of which are U.S. Treasury bonds, are they going to buy more Treasury bonds from the U.S. if the value of those bonds are falling and the bonds that they're holding are falling in value? No. They're not going to recycle that money. At the same time, the value of their currency, China's currency, the yuan, rises, and that means other countries in the world will want to use the yuan as a trading currency, not the dollar. It was just announced this past week that Britain wants to start trading. London, financial center, wants to start trading directly with Chinese currency. Ooh, that's a threat to U.S. dollar, which is the cornerstone of the U.S. economic empire. Okay, and all this crisis slows down Obama's efforts to push the Trans-Pacific Partnership free trade on steroids deal, because he missed the meeting, right? And it poses a risk for European banks that are all already very fragile, especially the Italian banks. How are they going to refinance their previous QE-type loans from the European Central Bank, called a long-term refinancing option, one and two? Italian banks haven't paid anything back. Well, they got to pay it all back this year. Well, what if the cost of paying it back rises? Ooh, more problems there. And in emerging markets, too, a crisis. Currencies go up and down, up and down. Money flows out of the emerging markets, which is happening now back to the West, causing them economic slowdown there as well. So you see, this thing has reverberations everywhere. And it's not by accident that the U.S. banks say they're dumping T-bills, or that the money market funds in the U.S. saying, uh-oh, what are we going to do with repos, or that the IMF and World Bank are giving warnings, or China and Japanese minister are giving warnings, or when the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, the largest U.S. bank, was asked recently, well, what is this all going to mean for the economy? Jamie Dimon, the CEO, said, quote, you don't want to know, unquote. No, you don't want to know, folks. It's a serious thing. And that's why it's going to get settled. And all the indications are they're moving towards a settlement. First, the settlement on how much are they going to really agree to with this Obamacare. You know, what's the token face saver here? That's what's being worked out right now. The House isn't going to come up with a proposal. They're going to wait for the Senate to come up with one and then vote on the Senate's. That's the way it's going to work. The Senate had one last night, and the remaining 30, 40 Tea Republican hardliners said, no, we don't want to vote on that one. And, of course, Boehner chickened out and said, okay, no, we can't vote on that. And now the Senate's going to do another one today, and we'll see. When Boehner said, yeah, we're going to vote, that means it's over. At least the first phase is over, the phase of how long they're going to allow the government to stay open, how long are they going to fund the debt ceiling until they can come and take another whack at it. But really what they're trying to do is to buy some more time, several months' time, 2-3 months, whatever, in order to figure out how do they really agree on cutting Social Security and Medicare, and how do they really bring the tax code overhaul cuts for corporations into the mix, you see, because that's what it's really about. Let's get the Obamacare off the table and go back to the real thing, and let's give ourselves some time to really work out the real thing. How much Social Security cuts, Medicare cuts, are we going to agree with? Right. How much tax cuts for corporations are we going to agree with? And once we do that, we throw that into the negotiating pot and mix, and we come up with a settlement. And voila, it looks like the debt ceiling of 2011 and the fiscal cliff once again. The focus has just changed. You know, instead of tax cuts for the wealthy 1%, it's tax cuts for their corporations. Instead of discretionary cuts, you know, it's going to be cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And in the process, they'll restore most of the defense cuts that was in the sequester. Republicans have already proposed legislation to do that. So we're going to end up with trillions more in cuts for the rest of us folks. The defense companies will be made whole, and big corporations get more tax cuts. And mom, grandpa, and grandma, and mom and pop businesses are going to bear the burden again. That's what it's all about. And we can see the elements, the political elements, coalescing around this once again, as they did last fall. And those elements are Obama and the Democrats, combined with big corporate America, who wants those corporate tax cuts in the mix, combined with them, and the leadership, giving leverage, more leverage to the leadership, Republican leadership in the Senate and the House, in order to slough off a few more Tea Party oppositionists. You know, then they'll go back and say, well, we really cut the deficit. We really cut Social Security, Medicare out of control, blah, blah, you know. We didn't get Obamacare, but we got this precedent. We're going to go after that again next year, you know. Just hold on. This is a long-term fight. You know, that's the argument they'll make. And they only got to switch about 10 of the Tea Republicans in the House to get the vote. So Boehner's counting the votes in the House. You know, the proposal yesterday, I don't have enough here. You know, he's going to squeeze because he's got to look good for the Tea Republicans, too. And then they'll work out their deal. Oh, it's a well-orchestrated dance, 2.0. You know, Tea Republicans upset the dance. They went in and they cut in. And they said, wait a minute, we want to dance, you know, and traditional Republican leadership had to step aside. But now they're coming back in again. Say, we're cutting back in on you. Go away. And now they're going to do the real negotiations, what it was all about, what Boehner said it was really about last August and got delayed. That's what's coming, and the deal is coming. It may come in a couple phases like before, but they don't know, you know, the psychological impact of all this on the U.S. economy and on the global economy in the meantime. There's no way to know exactly what the impact is going to be in the interim. And as I've said before, this whole process can be sufficient to trip us into a double-dip recession. And if it occurs, it could be enough to stop the recovery in Europe and send banks in Europe into another crisis, particularly Italian banks. That's what's going on. And that's what we got to look forward to over the next week. It'll be clearer next week. You'll see. ACA, Obamacare will be all, pretty much off the table. And then they will really begin the real horse trading. Corporate tax cuts, Social Security cuts, Medicare cuts. By the way, they say Medicare is the real problem. Medicare is not the problem. Medicare, Part A, hospital bill, Part B, doctor's bill, are fully funded for 10 years. The problem is Medicare Part D, prescription drugs, passed in 2005, in which we paid no taxes for, and that's causing the deficit in Medicare. All you got to do is pass the tax for Part D, and you have no problem in Medicare. Okay, but don't waste the crisis that you misrepresent and create to really go after Social Security and Medicare. That's what it's all about. Okay, folks, that's the update. Alternative Visions, and we'll be back next week probably talking about this again or talking about related topics on the global economy and the U.S. economy. Alternative Visions. Check out my blog, jackrasmus.com, if you want more detail.